Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingenstein. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingenstein with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're happy to have join us Laura Stoltenberg. Laura is the president and chief executive officer at Cryosa. She brings over three decades of experience in strategy, business development, and global general management. She's worked for large companies like GE and Medtronic as an executive, and she also has been a chief executive officer in more nimble startup environments. She's got some great things she's going to share around leadership and that lessons that she's learned in her career. Looking forward to today's conversation with Laura.
And it's great to have Laura joining us for our conversation. Appreciate you taking time to talk with us this week.
Absolutely. Thanks for the invitation, Mark.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, give me a little bit. I'd love to hear people's career stories and just a little bit of how they've gotten to where they are today. And if you could share a little bit of your background with our audience, that would be great.
Absolutely. Well, I graduated undergrad with a bachelor's of science in electrical engineering and a double major in management. And while I was at Bucknell University, I really became passionate about the intersection of technology and management. And that really defined the rest of my career. And that kind of aha was a lot of great innovations don't ever see the light of day because they can't raise money or they know how to get it to market. And on the other side, there are a lot of great businesses that end up dying because they can't continually innovate. So that defined my career. After undergrad, I went into one of GE's technical leadership programs, but on the commercial side of the business, so I actually started after that program selling, which is a great training ground to really understand customers, communication, how to drive revenue. And after that, did some strategy work, went to get my MBA and fully round out the business side, moved into strategy, mergers and acquisitions. So there's a lot of ways to grow a business. One is to sell more. The other is to buy more. So that is what I did. And then from there is when I went into my first global general management role at GE in healthcare and have stayed really there ever since. Even though I've worked for some traditional companies like GE, Medtronic, I've had somewhat non-traditional roles, really been attracted to more of the smaller, nimble kind of startup businesses looking to change standard of care. And because of that is why now I am in a true early stage innovative clinical company at Cryosa, innovating for new sleep apnea therapies.
Right. Well, I like to ask this question to most every guest that we have on. If you were to spin back time and talk to a 22-year-old Laura and give her some advice, what advice would you give her, knowing what you know now?
I would say take a deep breath. Don't be in such a rush. Careers are marathons. They're not sprints. I think at 22, you're so focused in high school about doing all the right things to get into college, and college you're doing all the right things to get the job. You land the first job and then take a look around and go, okay, this isn't 4 years, this is 40 years. So to have some patience with my own career, I think as part of that is the only thing you have to prove, person you have to prove something to is to yourself. Even though there's a lot to prove in a job to a boss or to colleagues, you are the only person who cares about your own career. So a career is made up of multiple jobs. So really feeling more empowered when I was in 2022 that it's okay, it's going to take a while, and I'm the one who's really in charge of it. And then as part of that, while effort matters, what's more important is outcomes. And taking the time to really know what's expected of me, not just assume. You know, you kind of come out of school and you've had, okay, this is my, I know what my homework is. I know it's going to be on the test. It's always not that clear once you get into a job. So taking the time and being okay with asking questions and clarifications, what is expected of me? How do I contribute to the company goals? And no matter where you are in an organization, you are there because you are going to contribute to the company's goals. So taking time to understand that and really focus on the priorities to be able to deliver those outcomes. And I found that the outcomes, doing that matters more than a particular job title or what your description is.
That's good. I thinking back to kind of that first time where you were tapped on the shoulder and somebody said, you know, I think you would be great for this role in a leadership role versus being an individual contributor. Thinking back to that time, what do you wish you would have known sooner about leadership of people? You know, it's definitely different to be great in a role and in a an area, and then all of a sudden you have others that you're managing. What would you tell somebody coming into that type of role?
Yeah, and I did do that. So when I was in mergers and acquisitions, I was individual contributor with one direct report at one point. And then I literally overnight with my role became responsible for a global P&L, hundreds of employees, hundreds of millions of dollars. And I actually, I think humility is important too in this. I asked my boss, I said, why me? What was it in me that you saw? And then can I understand that to be able to leverage those strengths? And it was really, you know, not only the experience, but how you approach it. So I think shifting from as an individual contributor, especially early in your career, it's all about feeling like you know the answer, to being a leader and being able to find the answer. And with that goes shifts the individual to the team. So it's less about having to know everything yourself and more about having the right people around you who either do know or can also find the answer. And it probably would have saved me a whole bunch of time and some sleepless nights being able to give myself a break, so to say, and not put all that pressure on that I had to do everything and know everything myself.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard a number of people say they felt like for the first year, they felt like an imposter. It's like, how did I get in this role? And hopefully nobody finds out that I don't know everything. And it's like, that's not your role. I think that quote, you don't have to know everything you need to find, or know every answer you need to find the answer. I think that's great advice. What advice would you give somebody that is, you know, we have kind of our audience, our first time leaders, and some are first time CEOs. What would you say in the CEO spot? What are some things that you found out versus leading a team, leading an entire organization that you've learned in your experience?
Oh boy, I would say there's a lot. I usually think of things on multiple dimensions. So I would say as far as it relates to the team, it's a combination of performance and potential. So especially when hiring people, they come in with an experience set. You're not only hiring them for that experience, but you're hiring them for the potential of what the role is going to be and what the company is going to be. And that you personally as a leader can contribute to that development and them reaching the potential. And a good way to find that out is just asking for references and people that have worked with folks, not just the formal ones, but informal networks. And even though a lot of people don't necessarily like to talk about development needs because they feel like they might be throwing a potential candidate under the bus, one of the things that I do is frame it as, I, as a leader, what do I need to look out for with this person, and how can I make him or her successful? And it frames it in a positive way around tapping into that potential, but you can get some really good insight into that person, and then how ultimately when they come on board, you can best work with them. I'd say the other is just clear prioritization, clear communication. You can never do everything that you want to do. So it's a responsibility of the leader to always be kind of focused on what is our end goal, and then helping the organization take things off their plate versus just constantly putting things on the plate.
So one of the things, and you've moved from very large environments, GE and Medtronic, to you mentioned more nimble organizations. What are some things, some shifts that you needed to make kind of in your approach to your work from that large organization to the kind of more the startup or the emerging growth type company?
I would say one just personally is like leaving the ego at the door. So what that means, and you hear often in smaller organizations, and I would say it's something that even larger organizations can learn, is the roll up the sleeves mentality. Is you're never too big for a task if it's something that absolutely has to get done for the benefit kind of the shareholders, stakeholders in the organization. So that would be one of, there's some infrastructure and some luxuries in big organizations that you just either don't have or can't afford in a smaller one. The other is even more of that focus and that prioritization. So if you're in a smaller organization, you live and die by achieving certain milestones. In big organizations, just by their nature, because their portfolios, they have multiple geographies, something looks like it's not going very well, you might be able to say, okay, well, we tried, and then you pivot a lot sooner, versus really kind of having the grit and the focus in a smaller organization kind of to achieve that next point of success or that next milestone.
So around culture of the organization, what are some things that you've learned about keeping a healthy culture? And again, making sure that as new people join the organization, and I'm sure you've seen this happen, is that you've got a small organization, as it grows, the culture can change just because of people coming in that, you know, are actually morphing the organization. How do you keep that culture healthy in an organization as a leader?
One, I think just recognizing it and being able to articulate what the values are of the culture. So, I mean, there's all these quotes, you know, culture eats strategy for breakfast, but what does that really mean? I think it's being able to articulate what it means, what are the actual behaviors that you want to demonstrate as an organization, and how do you show up to work every day demonstrating those behaviors. It kind of takes it from just the theoretical to the practical, and then being able to check in on those to say, that's what mattered before, does it still matter now? And it's okay to say, actually, you know, we need something a little bit different. And then taking the time with everyone that you work with, and this is, I think, a big difference of leadership versus management, is being able to have conversations about behaviors and expectations, and then being able to give feedback on observations, and not just assume that it's understood by people, but being able to really have the conversation about what it means.
So what are some of the qualities as you're looking at bringing people into your organization? What are the qualities that you're looking for, or that sometimes when people are making hiring decisions are maybe a little bit blinded to? Anything that stands out that you're focused on as you're evaluating people?
Yeah. So I grew up at GE. I was there 17 years. So you could say you could take the girl out of GE, but you can't take the GE out of the girl. So, and a lot of that was really formed in the Jack Welch era when it was about the four E's as it relates to culture and values. So the four E's, for those that don't know, are energy, energize, execution, and edge. So some of that I still take to this day, and I'll talk one that I kind of throw out as well and ignore. I think it the execute is table stakes. You know, so is somebody been able to do well at their prior jobs? As far as what was the definition of success? And did you succeed in that? That's number one. As part of the conversations, I think it's really important to understand the context of success and that explanations aren't always excuses, or sometimes excuses kind of bleed through. And I think the difference in that is that, one, do they kind of have a good perspective of context, and two, kind of take accountability for decisions and outcomes. And I think that's the difference between an explanation and an excuse. As far as energy and energize, that's part of how they show up. So are they personally really motivated? So you can tell when somebody comes in to an interview or a job and they haven't done their homework. They don't know about the company. They don't know why they want to be there. It doesn't mean you have to be over the top fake, but it does bleed through as far as are you going to bring energy to this organization? Energize is that they're a good teammate and that people like working with them. It's you don't have to, or at least respect them. You don't have to be liked necessarily in every role, but that's also something that you can find out through different relationships. And it's not just managing up. Usually it's the over and the down that you really find out if somebody is respected in their role. And then the fourth is edge. And that's a controversial one for those that grew up in the Jack Welch era. And one that I've learned to somewhat ignore, or I'd say modify for myself. It used to be edge was kind of the typical white male, I get in, I'm the smartest person in the room, and I'm going to tell you how it is. I think that is absolutely gone. And there's been a number of studies that as far as a leadership style is not particularly effective. I've, through the years, have morphed it and have heard leaders talk about edge being less about style and more about the ability to make tough decisions. So do you have edge in the sense when the going gets tough that you can lean in and make a decision and then be accountable to it? So I'd say those are continue to be kind of four modified that I grew up with and that I still look for.
So you were a part of probably when top grading was a part of GE and their culture. And have you carried any of that forward as far as that mindset of top grading?
So is top grading applicable? That was one of the, everybody is forced into the curve, right? And you have a 9 blocker and where do you sit? So I would say the forced up and out is gone. I mean, I think that really meaningful careers are made not on ladders. You might fall off a ladder and get back on again. You might jump to another one. So I would say that the up and out mentality and the forced ranking is out. What I do still carry with me is a couple things that I think were good about that is that the concept, again, of performance and potential and the transparency and communication of expectations and how you do. So part of that ranking was having the conversation with people of this is where you are and why, and if you want to move, what can you do? So the conversation, I think, which wasn't really talked about in that framework of top grading, I think those were actually best practices and important, and that I try to do still today.
So what are you most excited about in your industry? And there's a lot of talk about the use of AI in every company. Anything that on the horizon that you think is that you're most excited about as far as for the future in your space as well as kind of overall business?
Yeah, I think, I love healthcare, and it's something that is so personally accessible to people. Every role that I've been in, I've either personally been touched with, had a family or friend. And I think if that does that, that just creates an inherent purpose. There's so many clinical unmet needs right now. And right now we're in sleep apnea, and that's absolutely the case. There's a billion people that suffer globally. Most aren't diagnosed. And if they are, they're not treated effectively. So I think there's still a tremendous amount of potential for innovation across multiple areas of healthcare. I would say, and that is really from the very beginning of getting appropriately tested and understanding what you have, through making the decisions around the best treatment and then the post-care following. And I think as far as AI, yes, I was part of what I did back in the early 2000s was a lot of mergers and acquisitions around IT. So healthcare IT was a big buzz then. Now we call it AI. It was always it's been there. It's just been evolving. And I think the pace of innovation is absolutely incredible. It's getting beyond, it really is about not just the capability of what you can do with AI, but the so what of it. Just having data for data's sake doesn't really help anyone. In fact, it can kind of make it worse if it slows things down, if it confuses things. So I think it's the opportunity really is to enable still humans with sorting through millions and billions of data points to be able to make appropriate decisions. And that goes from physicians to really even us as patients and consumers ourselves. So it's really about, I think, empowering decision making and taking out the parts of the job that aren't productive. I think everybody has parts of their job that are just boring and monotonous. And if that can be automated, great.
Yeah, absolutely. Every leader is a learner, continues to grow and develop. Any books that you would put on a leader's reading list?
So I would say as far as books, there's different categories, and there's so much out there to access. I'd say a category that's really helpful is around interpersonal relationships and emotional intelligence. So Primal Leadership is about emotional intelligence. Fierce Conversations is another one. So I think any book like Fierce Conversations or that it helps give perspective on how to have difficult, constructive conversations is really helpful. Others, as far as just understanding kind of career paths, development, whether it's for yourself or for your team, the leadership pipeline is one that I'd recommend. Oldie but goodie that I've gone back to every job that I've taken is The First 90 Days by Watkins. And then there's a whole host, depending on what kind of practical skills you're trying to build. A lot of questions that I'm asked are, do I have to have my MBA? And I usually say that's a very personal decision. It takes a lot of time. It's very expensive. But if you're looking for some basic financial acumen, I mean, there's a lot of books like How Finance Works or mini courses that you can take online.
What parting advice would you give a new or up and coming leader?
You can be true to yourself and have a very successful career, again, because you're the one that defines it. That doesn't mean that you're blind to social situations and you don't adapt. I think by nature, you learn to adapt to situations and to people to be successful. But you can do that in a way where you're still true to yourself at the core. It sounds like unicorns and rainbows, but it's something that throughout my career and with people that I work with, we really take the time to always go back to.
How would somebody learn more about your company and just some of the work that you're doing?
Sure. Well, we do have a website, cryosa.com, and we are on LinkedIn. So you can go ahead and follow us. There isn't too much information out there, just given the stage that we're in, which is pre-commercial. But if you follow us on LinkedIn as we go through our major milestones, you'll be able to get that information. And do look out for us, because Numinity is doing what we're doing in the sleep space. We have wonderful clinical data where we're really making a difference in people's lives with obstructive sleep apnea. And like anything else, sometimes you say, it takes a while. It's not easy, but it is absolutely worth it.
Well, thanks so much, Laura. I appreciate your time and your thoughts today. I know that you had some great thoughts that will help those that are in that growth stage in their career, and wish you the best as you grow your company, and looking forward to seeing the growth that you're going to be experiencing.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate the conversation, and thank you for doing what you do.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.